Welcome to the Rise Network podcast show, a podcast dedicated to help you reach your dream lifestyle through investing in real estate. We're going to be sitting down with new, intermediate, and experienced investors to talk all about real estate and how it has changed their lives. If you're looking to scale your portfolio or even just get into real estate investing, you're in the right place. Make sure to tune in. Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Rise Real Estate Investing Podcast with your host, Mayu Thava. I had to mix it up on them, you know? I usually say my name first, but I had to hit him with your name. Mayu, as per usual, I don't even need to ask you the questions, so go for it.
What's going on, right? This week, acquisition side, it's been quiet. We haven't even really been deal hunting too hard. We've got two closings between me and Austin, and then I've got a third flip that's closing, and every single property has its own challenges. The first one, the duplex, getting that finance was a challenge. Like, we only got a firm commitment when, like, Monday or something of this week.
So that was super odd situation, man. I don't know why it came down to the wire. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So that one, it's a off-market wholesale deal that went from the wholesaler. So purchase and sale contract signed with the wholesaler, and then they assigned that to Austin, which then got assigned to our JV partner. And I'll be honest on that one. I think what happened there is that we'd submitted the same, like we submitted that application along with an application for myself. And I've been flagged, let's say, with Scotia for some like transactions that were like perfectly above board. And I think the underwriter just went, fuck it, I'm rejecting. So then we took it to Street Capital, which is now called something else. And they rejected it because there was a wholesale, like a fat wholesale fee on it. And then eventually we just took it to RBC. And RBC,
the homies at RBC, shout out RBC. They blessed it. They provided 80% loan to value.
Yeah, 80% loan to value, which like it basically includes wholesale fee in it, which is always like a pain for financing, right? So our JV partner is happy because now his capital outlay is a lot lower than he initially thought.
Yeah. So real estate just makes some weird twists and turns because we thought we were golden for financing, but it is what it is, right? We were able to bounce back and recover, thank God. We had our private money lined up just in case all of the A-lender banks said no. Always have a backup plan. Super important, guys. How's the Belleville flip coming along, Mayu?
Oh man, after Scotia rejected me on that one, I just went, fuck it, I'm not gonna go to the banks anymore. So I raised I raised 80 grand on a promissory note at I think 8%, if nice. I remember right. And then the rest, me and my investor, we're just splitting it because like total purchase price was 160, so it's not too much. So we're funding that one. That one I knew would be a headache, but like whatever, like, so now it's just about the closing and just getting everyone to sign everything they need to do and deposit the money as they need to. Machete, that one's closing on Friday. That was the one that me and Austin just wholetailed, took it to market really quick, made I think 45-50K, somewhere around that range. We still have to calculate that, by the way. That one was, it's ridiculous. Like, so it turns out there's a shed on the property and the shed sits on kind of like the city's like borderline.
Yeah. So it's not within the lot or confines of the actual property. It's on the city's, it's out of the lot size. So it technically belongs to the city.
So instead of asking us to move the shed, the lawyer requested that we contact the city, buy that lot, and include it in the transaction. I'm like, why the fuck would I do that?
Yeah, I mean, the purchase and sales and agreement literally says the plot of land they're buying. It says the frontage, it says the depth. They signed off on buying it. So it's not like it should be news to them, right?
So it was just an unnecessary headache. I think they're trying to use it on grounds to like renegotiate or something. And I just told my lawyer, I'm like, look, because my real estate agent contacted the buying agent and was like, what do you guys want here? And they were like, oh, we just want you guys to like start the process or something like vague like that. So I told the lawyer, I was like, sure, I'll start the process and I'll email the city and say, hey, like whoever's like buying this property wants to acquire the city land. And so I sent out that email, but I'm like, I don't know what you guys want from me. I just told the lawyer, we're not buying it. Like, this is dumb. This is 2 days before closing. Like, we're not going back. Nothing's happening here. So hopefully that just smooth sailing. But Austin, you've had a crazy week. So let's talk about you, man.
We're not gonna get too into it. Let's actually, we were talking a bit offline and we're gonna film a podcast episode on it and just go through all of the comments on Reddit.
to see them talk shit about me and address it. But essentially what Mayu's referring to is the Toronto Life article, which I'm sure a lot of you guys, new listeners of this podcast, actually probably tuned in because you saw the article on Toronto Life. Being able to scale to 20 properties in 2 years at the age of 25. I had a feeling that there was going to be backlash. Even the editors told me, look, Austin, we're going to publish this, but we want to let you know that you're going to get threats and things are probably not going to go over well because people don't look at success stories too favorably. And long and behold, when it released, pretty much 80% of the comments were negative. I didn't sit through and read through all of them. I didn't really let it impact me too much. Really never let it impact me at all, but it did give me very good visibility and actually helped our podcast hit number 2 in iTunes or Apple Podcast in the business Canadian business section. So that's pretty dope. There's good value that came out of that. On top of that, on my end, I was just doing some house cleaning items. So set up a new corporation for wholesaling and flipping to obviously minimize taxes and redeploy capital through that corporation. So spoke to my accountant and set all of that up. And on top of that, I sent out 12 or 13K flyers for the wholesaling side of things. We're going to see how that pans out. And for our next episode, I'm sure I'll be giving an update because it's going to be hitting houses the beginning of next week. So I'm super excited. Couple of things in the pipeline. We don't want to keep this going on forever, so we'll spare the details short. But yeah, it's been a pretty hectic week, especially from a social point of view where a lot of people have been reaching out.
That's awesome, man. Okay, so with that being said, this week's guest is Sunny. Sunny's been an earlier partner, I think, with yourself, Austin. But yeah. He's got a crazy story. He invested heavily in his education early on to the point of where he maybe regrets it a little bit, but he's been a huge action taker since then. He's got a number of properties, but I'll let Sunny kind of start things off. So with that being said, guys, check out our episode with Sunny.
Sunny, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. All excited. How are you guys?
We are tired. It's 9 a.m. in the morning and I had a 1:30 a.m. night yesterday. So
I went to sleep earlier than that, so I can't complain.
Well, you have a 2-year-old kid. Anyway, Sunny, why don't you give a high level overview, maybe just like a less than a minute overview on your accomplishments and kind of who you are?
So I started back in 2018, and well, I wanted to be the best at real estate, had the funds. So hey, you know what? Why not get coached by some professionals. So I ended up actually spending in $87,000 in real estate education. I know it's a lot. And if I had known, if I'm in the same shoes today, I would never spend that much money. But, you know, just trying to be the best at, you know, because I knew most of the real estate investors are millionaires through, you know, real estate. So that's why I sort of wanted to jump in, be the best, spent that kind of money there, try to learn all the strategies. And yeah, it comes to today, I have about 13 does, making about 5,000 in passive income. So just a little bit about myself. Yeah.
just gonna glaze over that, Sunny. Okay, so wait. So I know you said you started in 2018, but it sounded like you had already had an interest in real estate prior to that.
Absolutely. Been always wanting to. It was like one of those things that I was sitting on the sidelines, but I knew that real estate is the way to go and it's a safe investment strategy. There was a time I remember what I was always into, like, you know, investments and, you know, from a very young age, but giving my money to the banks. And then I soon realized, I'm like, you know what, my mutual funds aren't really doing much. It's the return on investment is not really anything. So I got to really do something else. So I had that investment mindset, but it's just like, I realized, you know, I have to put the money in the right resources in order to get the proper return on investment.
Yeah, mutual funds are robbery. They take like a management fee.
All the banks are robbery. Man, you should manage your own funds.
So that's interesting. So you spent 87K in education. Let's actually dive back into that. So when you were getting into the world of real estate, what led you there? And how did you start navigating into getting your first property? Let's just walk through the steps because there's a lot to unpack in your journey.
Absolutely. Yep. So this was soon after I got married back. Yeah, in 2017, me and my wife were working and we had some funds and, you know, we see this poster for real estate investor, big shot people, you know, coming down, and I see Sylvester Stallone in the poster too. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, I would love to go see him. All right. So we went downtown. It was a real estate big group meetup and I met a whole bunch of people over there. They had some courses, you know, like started off at like a $3,000 package initial, like an intro on their strategies. So we like, you know what, why not? Let's spend that and, you know, just see how, test the waters, how it is. Took their bootcamp course. It was a lot to consume, you know, someone who doesn't know about the real estate strategy, but it was too much to consume in the 3 days. So that's where they had like their upselling package sort of thing, you know, where, and these people are from the US. So they were all US instructors and, you know, they had their Vegas programs and this and that. And me coming absolutely new into this, like I said, I wanted to be the best at it. So, and we did have the funds to support for it too at the time. We had great credit scores, how to leverage the money. So we kind of got a little bit of insight on how you can use your money wisely in that sense. And, you know, use the banks, what, you know, how you can get more lending as such, how you can utilize your credit cards. And, you know, so all that stuff was really fascinating to me at the time. Like, wow, there's so much that I don't know in this real estate world and the leveraging piece. It went into their bootcamp. After that, there was some, I got caught into the upselling piece, you know? So I heard about it on the Bigger Pocket podcast afterwards, like, you know, there's tons of this education, but it's a lot of free material out there. You know, if you just put your head into the right places, you can pretty much get all that information for free, you know, like connecting with people like you, for example, as such, you know, real estate meetups. And, but yeah, I had week-to-week phone calls with the US instructors that kind of guide me in the right direction, what wholesaling was, you know, and it was mostly for the flipping side of the business. So I actually started in Buffalo. Created up an LLC, had a whole website and all that stuff. Then I soon realized that, you know what, this going to the US thing is not really for me. And I want to really start within Canada. And so I started looking for more of, you know, real estate investors within Canada, because I knew that if the same model is happening in the US, it's got to be happening in Canada as well.
So did you end up buying in Buffalo or no? Like you
started- I was very close to it. But just something wasn't really clicking at the time. And, you know, I bought my first property in Hamilton. And this was at the time where I was actually doing the course as well. So I was just signing up for the course, but simultaneously, I was actually closing on a deal on a new construction home. Not knowing anything about real estate at the moment, I made a lot of mistakes, you know, at the very beginning, and bought a new construction home, did a lot of the upgrades from the builder, which I realized afterwards, I'm like, oh, you know what? The builder charged me arm and a leg for the upgrades. And if I were to do these myself, you know, I could have saved a fortune. So I ended up spending about 110K in upgrades, and I had the money at that time. So it wasn't like, you know, that big of a deal, but, you know, sooner realizing I'm like, oh my God, you know, this would have cost me about 30K. Why the hell did I, you know, spend about 110 in the upgrades? But of the same fact, you know, like I realized, you know, I am spending a lot of money there and I better learn from this, you know, like I am paying the, like, you know, the learning cost. But I don't want to be the one to give up. I have to, you know, strive. I have to get out of this, because I know once I get the hang of it, then it's smooth sailing afterwards. So on a very high level, you know, that's what I sort of started off with.
So 3,000 initially, and that upsell was how much?
There was two upsells. So there was two upsells. So there was one upsell for $50,000.
My gosh. That's a big jump. So,
It was a big jump, yeah. And yeah. And the way they marketed, man, I honestly, it's like...
I've seen it.
As soon as you went in, they would, you know, ask for your credit scores and how much income you make. And they kind of push it in a way where they say, hey, you know what, we'll be working with the people who can afford, like, you know, who have the financial capability. So they already knew, like, from the 200 people that are there, who, you know, the target people are. And to me, I'm like, oh, you know what? I want to be one of them, you know, to work with these gurus, right? So I'm providing like all my information, and my credit scores are like in the 800s, same me and my wife's, right? So like an excellent credit score, you know, we had the money, we had good jobs. So we were like on their target list, as you can say, right? So yeah, we did sign up for the premium package. We were, you know, week to week phone call. And like I said, I didn't mind doing that because I knew that I'm putting towards education at the end of the day. You know, and having the week-to-week phone call. So that's the reason why the first package happened. And then the second upselling happened afterwards, where it was for another 30 something thousand dollars, where the coach would actually come and see you in person and, you know, like, and all that stuff. But soon, you know, after a year and a half or so being in real estate, I realized there's tons of coaches here that I can just go meet in person. It's financially much more affordable, and I don't have to spend that much. But like I said, I didn't have the right knowledge and direction.
Are you saying 50,000 USD?
50,000 Canadian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So 87K Canadian is what I spent in the education. It's not that I didn't learn anything. I did. But I'm sure that similar amount of items, you know, that I've learned and I picked up, I could have done it for a much better price. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, you're at where you're at now, essentially financially free, 13 doors in less than 2 years. So it meant something. It meant something. It definitely did. But okay, so you were taking this course. You bought a pre-construction in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And why was that actually? Because I'm assuming the course would probably emphasize more of the either the fix and flip or right. a renovation type project.
Correct. So like I mentioned, it's the pre-construction that I was doing at the time was simultaneously while I was signing up for the course. So it's like if I had waited just like a couple more months, I probably wouldn't have jumped for that deal. But you know, it was back in 2017-ish where the market was just booming, the Toronto market, right? So everything was going up and the Toronto was just on a skyrocket and Hamilton was sort of like piggybacking off, you know, Toronto at the time. So I was like, oh, you know what? I'll go in with new construction. By the time it's even built, I'll have a lot of the appreciation. So that was the mindset that I went with. But soon after we saw, like after 2018, you know, the market kind of went sideways. So, and Hamilton took a bit of a hit because of that, because it was just piggybacking off the Toronto market. So now it's sort of in the same areas where I purchased it. So, you know, I'm actually thinking of selling it fairly soon.
So you went from the pre-con in Hamilton, I guess, what was the next property after that then?
So after, the Hamilton, which sort of messed me up with my debt to service ratios because the property itself was very, very like, you know, costly.
You didn't have a principal residence either, right?
I did not have a principal residence, no. Okay. So been renting in Toronto. But going for $845 for a brand new construction home with superior upgrades, like it's the best house on the entire lot, but I didn't know about the comparables. I don't know about all those things, you know, like it's not about doing super upgrade. It's like, what is a 4-bedroom, you know, 3-bath going at the end of the day on that, you know, in that neighborhood? That's what you're going to get at the end of it.
So. I actually have this conversation with some of my friends sometimes. My preference is always to be the shittiest house on the best like street, right?
Exactly, right?
So then all the comps around you just kind of increase your value. And, you know, it's harder for the bottom tier to decrease in value rather than it is for the top tier to kind of drop, right?
For sure. And I actually been working mostly in the financial industry, same as my wife, but we do have our own incorporated company. So it's more so, you know, what we declare as our incomes at the end of the day. And that works towards like, you know, debt to service ratio. So I don't know if you remember, Austin, like I first told you, so going into like right after the Hamilton, where our debt to service ratios were sort of like, you know, towards the max side, my first property, afterwards, like after doing a lot of research, I found Windsor, you know, being like the lowest costing market and, you know, trying to look for a fixer upper at the time, just, you know, learning about sort of through the burr strategy and all, but I was still with the flip, you know, mindset because of, you know, my coaches and everything. And that's, that they were pushing on. But at the time I had to get B lender, because my ratios was all maxed. That happened. Now that I converted into like a duplex, you know, now I'm getting about $1,200 in passive income from there. And then that sort of, you know, that gave me like the kick. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And then I went through the refinance, right, process and getting a huge, you know, a check at the end of the day, like something like $87,000, you know, got back. So I was like, whoa, this is amazing. You know, like, what if I just repeat this? And I remember bumping into Austin last year at OREC in London. You know, that's where we sort of connected and yeah, just picking everybody's brain and, you know, the other investors. And I was like, this is amazing. There's so many people like me, you know, with the same mindset that are here too. You know, I don't have to look overseas. So yeah, I just started picking his brain a little bit, you know, other people's brain. And then I saw, you know, started going to these monthly meetups. And then that was just an eye opener for me. I was like, wow, this place is just packed with knowledge. And I never really wanted to miss any other meetup. So I've, you know, been there since then.
That's amazing. So Maya, you go for it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, let's dive into that duplex, the one that's cash flowing you 1200, because I'm sure a lot of people would love to get that.
So Mayu, we had this exact same question. I was just like, yeah,
dive into that. So what year did you buy the duplex? And before, actually, yeah, okay, what year did you buy the duplex?
So this is just last year. Last year,
2019 July? Shit. Okay.
Crazy hot for those who don't know. In 2019 July, Windsor was on fire. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you had no connections in Windsor at this point. You're just getting started. Uh-huh. How does that look like? What's the process? Like, what did you do to get started?
Okay, so I found this property connected with a realtor who was actually had a listing up in Chatham. So I contacted him and he told me, he's like, he was an old realtor, you know, but been in the business for a very long time. He's like, you know what, Sonny, why don't you come down to Windsor, you know, and just come see me. You wouldn't believe what's happening. This was a Windsor agent. And he had a listing in Chatham where I first looked him up. And I was, you know, like every single day on realtor.ca trying to find a good deal because I don't know much about the private deals at the time. And as a matter of fact, all my deals have been on realtor.ca. I have not been, I have no single deal that's private. So yeah, this went to Windsor, you know, had a session with him. And then I realized, I'm like, you know what? I don't mind the drive. I like the city. I want to know more about the city. So I've actually been to Windsor almost 30 times since the last year. So I wanted to know. Yeah, it's crazy. 30 times, you know, driving 4 hours back and forth. And when I would go there, I would take the Airbnb and stay there. And there will be some days where I'm just like driving through the streets, you know, just learning through the neighborhoods. I'm like, if this is where I'm going to be investing, I want to be the best at it. I want to know what's going on. And it was honestly very difficult because, you know, I'm leaving my son who's just, you know, growing and he was one at the time. So I missed out on a lot of that. But it's like for the bigger goal, like, what do you really want? Right. So I want it to be passive, you know, income. I want to generate that. I want to be living in, you know, like a financial free kind of lifestyle. So I knew that if I'm putting the sacrifices now, it's going to be fruitful towards the end. Right. So yeah, it was like, I went there, I started the whole duplex now process. I found this deal of 180. My realtor told me, you know what, if you just give two, you'll get it. Right. That's what the guy's asking. I'm like, okay, two it is, man. And two, 100,000 to like a person from Toronto, it's like it's a joke, right? Like, where do you see this kind of prices? So yeah, I got the property for 201. I still remember. Wasn't really sure on how much renovation should cost at the time, as such. So I connected with the handyman.
Was it like really rough condition? Like there was.
So it wasn't really in rough condition. And if I were to do the same renovations today, I would have done it for a fraction of the price. But my mindset from the very beginning was, you know, I don't want to do any kind of sloppy job. Like I want, if I'm giving a renovated property to somebody, I want to do like a top notch, you know, like be different from everybody else. So Austin actually knows about this, that, you know, I try to put like all the stainless steel appliances. I try to put, you know, the quartz countertops. It's just because I'm trying to attract a certain kind of, you know, tenant. You know, from like the pool of, because I feel like if I'm getting the right tenant, if somebody's willing to pay me more, I'm actually like, you know, getting rid of a lot of, you know, the bad tenants as right. such. So, and the people will take care of my property too, whoever is willing to pay me that top dollar. So went through the renovation as part, and I was actually, while I was going to Windsor, I was actually taking part in these renovations. There's been the whole basement over there, the lower unit, I actually did the jackhammer myself. You know, I learned the whole plumbing. So that was actually the property that I was more hands-on as such, trying to know the process. And now it's like, I'm sort of sitting on the sidelines and guiding, you know, like, and asking the right questions and making, you know, other people who are expert at it, make them do the work while I do the other side, you know, like focus on the business, real estate business as such. But I did want to be part of, you know, the whole renovation process in and out from the very first property, which I did.
Okay. And your handyman, how did you get connected with him? And what did, I kind of know the story. Mm-hmm. Basically, you went, when you say luxury, he means Toronto luxury renovation. Why don't you give a better picture of what renovations cost and how you came across your handyman? Mm-hmm. Just so we can kind of do the numbers with the audience so they understand what's going on.
Sure. So I ended up spending about $50,000 in labor for the top and bottom unit. And the reason why it costed so much is because we ended up changing the full electrical. You know, there was some knob and tube wiring that was all removed. And we actually ended up knocking a few walls down too. So try to make it an open concept, have an LVL. So that what, you know, kind of rises the price up. If I just want to, you know, just paint the walls, you know, and just use the existing cabinetry, you know, like the prices are significantly lower. So yeah, we just trying to make it all open concept, but not cut down on the bedrooms or anything. So, and then the whole base, the lower unit was just, you know, a full gut to completely brand new, from framing to insulation to, you know, making, like, designing the whole, you know, the washroom, the kitchen. So I was part of that a lot too. So 50,000 was labor, roughly about 30,000 was 30 or 35,000 was in materials, I would say. And yeah, the property then appraised for 330.
Wow. Appraised for 330. Yep. So you made almost 50 grand in equity in that case from that property, and your cash flowing $1,200 a month. So what are you renting each unit at, and what are the bedrooms? Because that's a lot of net cash flow. Some people can retire off of that.
This top unit is renting for 1800 plus 60% utilities.
Wow. So,
three bedroom?
It's a three bedroom, one bath.
And they're paying utilities? What?
And they're paying the utilities as well.
Okay, so wait, so 1800 upstairs, and it's a three bedroom house. And then what about in the basement then?
So the basement has two bedroom, one bath.
And how much
does that go? The massive kitchen. So that goes for now 1400 all inclusive. I started off initially with, you know, 60-40.
Like Toronto rents. Like, this is crazy. 1800 for a three bedroom upstairs. And then for like me and Austin, we have single family houses there that go for 1800, but that's the entire house. So this is really good. I think your luxury rental side has a good niche market. That's like where like people are willing to pay for it. Right.
Right. Right. And there's tons of people that, you know, sort of messaged me, oh, we absolutely loved it, but it's just way out of our budget. So I'm like already, like, I sort of look at it like a filter system, you know, where I have a whole bunch of people, they love it, but the price is not really meeting. So, you know, just coming down to eventually the right tenant by, you know, the screening process and all that stuff. But yeah, so upstairs, I was initially starting off with the 60-40 sort of a deal. And then I soon realized, you know what, it's better for me to go all inclusive. The reason why I did that is because and from other properties, I've done the similar thing, like all inclusive. So and upstairs, I usually do 2100 all inclusive. Downstairs, I do 1400 all inclusive. At the time when I first started with this property, it was 1800 plus 60% utilities and 1200 plus 40% utilities.
So no utilities are coming out of your pocket. Utilities would be somewhere around the $400 to $500 mark if you were to.
Which it is.
Yeah, that would knock you down the $1,000 range of cash flow. Nice.
Yeah. So I'd rather have that, right, where, you know, like even if it's a little bit over utilities, but it saves me a lot of time where at the end of the month, I'm sending these utility bills to the tenants. I have to do the math for them. You know, this is how much you owe me. This is how the downstairs tenant owe me. So I'm just trying to be more efficient with my time at this point. I don't really care about, you know, 40, 50 bucks, you know, on top if they use up on utilities, because at this point, I have not really run into any issues where you know, their utilities are just going crazy overboard, where I'm kind of regretting the decision. I do cap in about the $500 mark for the utilities, the 300 and the 200 for the downstairs extra. And the 2100 and 1400 is usually what I get for the single family that I'm renting out, premium units.
So I don't think you guys realize how creative this is, because we're talking about a market where typically when you're doing something under 1 meter, then tenants refuse to split utilities. But it just goes to show that your product screams like luxury, and tenants are like, okay, I don't care if it's 1 utilities, I'll pay 60% to get the bigger unit, you know? So that's
absolutely,
that's awesome. Okay.
So all of your units since then, have you stuck to the luxury side of the renovations, and how have things
changed? I did. It's funny because this was my very first property, and I wasn't really sure of the rent, and I didn't know, should I be 1600, should it be 2000? So this tenants come, you know, try to I put up an ad on Kijiji while we're close to about 80% done in the renovation for the top unit.
So are you doing the property management yourself then, if you're leasing?
I am, yes.
For all of
your, I don't have a property manager, because it's something that I can manage myself. And I realized that because of the kind of renovations I'm doing, I'm not really running into any issues where, you know, there's any repairs or anything that I need to, you know, spend my time on. I hardly get any phone calls because I'm doing the good job at the very beginning. So it's saving me a lot of time with, you know, the repair work and all that stuff. So it's something that I can manage easily. The only time I'm very, very involved is when I'm, you know, renting out the units, the whole screening process and all that stuff. And after that, it's just smooth sailing. So another thing that I wanted to really touch base on and push was that I'm giving two separate laundries as well. So there's absolutely zero interaction between the two units. There's no shared laundry, there's no schedule, there's no nothing. So that's part of the reason why I get that top dollar, because in the winter months, nobody really wants to go outside, you know, to do laundry. If they have kids, you know, and all that stuff, it's just easy. The unit has it. So one's downstairs laundry and upstairs is a separate laundry.
So you just put yourself in the hats of an occupant of the unit. Like, what do I want? What's going to be the most convenience? What would I like to pay top dollar for? I like a beautiful kitchen. I want my laundry in my house, mm-hmm. and I want a nice open space. You're just putting yourself in their position and giving them the product that they want.
Exactly. Yeah. I try to put myself in their shoes as well. You know, like, what would I want? Right. And what would I be comfortable paying? So, in that sense, like, I, me personally, like, we live a pretty lavish lifestyle, you know, with me and my wife. So we like to see, hey, you know what, like a nice open concept, stainless steel, quartz countertop, you know, a lot, separate laundry. That's a comfortable space for me to live, and I don't have to deal with anybody else, you know. So I hardly ever hear about the issues between the two tenants, as such.
So I'm just selfishly wondering now, are you putting hardwood or LVP in there?
I'm putting the luxury vinyl, the LVP flooring. Okay. Yeah. And I realized that that's the best way to go, for, especially for the lower units, because as we all know, Windsor, you know, is a flood zone in a lot of areas. Something that I've started doing now in my renovations is dry core flooring. I highly, highly recommend that.
Dry core flooring?
For the,
dry
basement,
core.
For the basement renos.
For the basement. So for the basement renos.
Waterproofing in a sense.
Yes, okay. It's waterproofing in a sense. It's sort of like a subfloor, and it has little areas where the water can sort of just seep through. So after doing that, like, I've noticed, like, you know, that even the recent flooding that happened in Windsor, some of the neighbors, you know, their basements are flooded, but mine wasn't flooded because all the water was, even if it did come, it was all underneath the subfloor. It didn't even come on top of the sub, the flooring. So yeah, it's about, you know, it cost me about $2,000 in total, but honestly, it saved me a lot more in the long run because, you know, there's been issues where if I, you know, basement gets like flooded, then I have to take out, you know, the drywall, the insulating, the baseboards again, the labor. It just costs so much more at the end. So I'd rather spend that money upfront.
Right.
Okay. So you're at, oh man, that was a great breakdown of the first property. Yeah. And we're moving on to the second one. So why don't you talk, actually, before you get into the second one, during this time, are you working full time or are you just like committed in real estate fully? Like what's going on with your personal life in that sense?
Okay. So no, I am working full time. As well, so this is sort of the thing, but you know, the luxury of working remote. So even before COVID, like now it's like more completely norm now where everybody's just working remote, but yeah, prior to like COVID as well, my work was all remote, so it was easy for me to travel to Windsor, just have my laptop, internet, and I'm good to go, like attend my meetings, and then I would, you know, as long as the work has been done, that's what it mattered, and I would focus on real estate and then maybe do a little bit of my office work at night.
And where were you working?
TD.
Sorry?
TD Bank.
Wow. Yeah. That's phenomenal. Dude, like, this is very impressive. Okay. So, working full time, killing it, put money in education, all of this good stuff. Went down to Windsor 30 times, not 30 days, 30 times.
So probably 30 times. 30 days. Each time when I would go there, it's like I would stay there for sometimes 3-4 days. There was times where I stayed there for an entire week and 2 weeks at one time where I'm just trying to finish up the renos, you know, and
I don't know about Austin, but me and Austin take turns. Like we go every other month basically, so we'll take turns. Sometimes we go a little bit more frequently than that, and
sometimes we go twice a month.
Sometimes twice a month.
But you guys do like day trips, right?
What was that?
You guys do like day trips?
Yeah
in the morning, come at night.
Last time I went, I woke up at like 5 and then I got out there just before 10. And then I came back at like 11:30 at night. I was just like, I'm getting back to that. I'm not staying in Windsor. Well, we're also probably too cheap to pay for the Airbnb. So I guess it's part of that as well.
So Sonny, let's talk about number two. So number one went very successful, and let's walk through number two.
So that was number two, right? So now we're going into number three.
Number one was Hamilton. This is number two. Let's walk through the next one.
Right. So the next one, I got this property at Palette. Nice brick home, listed again. It was, and the reason why it wasn't anybody's radar is because it was listed in Toronto. So not a people in Windsor was actually able to see it. So I was just on driving back from Windsor. I see it on Kijiji. You know, I contact this person and she tells me, oh, you know what? This property that you're looking on Palette is sold, but I do have another one. And, you know, it's listed in Toronto. So, you know, a lot of visibility is not there. So it's just sort of like, you know, making the phone calls, just being proactive. You know, in making the call. So I was lucky enough to get that property for $243, full brick home. And again, this one, I went with the same kind of idea where, you know, having a lower unit and which already had the washroom. Pretty much all I need to do sort of was just make the kitchen. And I didn't actually refinance this. I kept it as is because I got an amazing rate. I got variable rate, and now I'm just looking at it. It's actually just sitting at 1.3. So I don't want to go through, you know, the refinancing process and all that stuff. I'm all in. This property was just 25,000 in renovation, costing me about 245. Upstairs, I'm getting 2,100 all inclusive. Downstairs, I'm getting 1,150. I actually wanted to get 1,400 out of this. It is a smaller unit than my first one at Dougal. But the reason why I sort of went with this one, and I wanted to sort of push for like at least a 1,200 mark, but you know, just the human factor sort of came in where, you know, with the affordability and she had some kids and stuff, and it was sort of guaranteed money from the government as well. So I was like, you know what, it's okay. Sometimes it's not just about, you know, making the money, but, you know, be able to help out others as well. So yeah, from upstairs, I'm getting 2,100. I added another bedroom.
So how many bedrooms upstairs?
Four bedroom, one bath, and two bedroom, one bath in the basement.
Okay. And okay, so for those who don't know, when you say in Toronto, you don't mean the properties in Toronto, the properties in Windsor, but it was listed in Toronto. So how do I find that? Because I want to look at that.
Honestly, I don't know how you would find that, right? But it's just one of those things that I was told, you know, by that realtor, right? So it's that it's actually listed in Toronto because the owner was, you know, living in Toronto. So they listed in the Toronto region and not in the Windsor region.
Okay.
So that's how I sort of came about it. But yeah, that's been, I hardly spent any money on that property. You know, and even me, like I try to do like the top dollar kind of renovation. So 25,000 in my kind of renovation is low. So for some people will be like, whoa, this is 25,000 a lot. But you know, when you're putting in the quartz countertop, you know, when you're putting in new cabinetry, separate laundries, you know, top, bottom, and, you know, soundproofing and insulating it, 25,000 is actually on the very low side. And that's also because, you know, like I'm actually putting in a little bit of the work as well. Yeah, that's the reason why. And
how did you manage to get 2,100 upstairs?
Yeah, I mean, Palette's a great area, but 2,100 is.
Yeah, awesome. We've got Joe Stratus is a 3 or 4 bedroom, right?
No, no. So Palette's not comparable to Joe Stratus, though, right? Palette is more. It's that area where it becomes very, very, like, very desirable, where there's a lot of home ownership in that area.
Right.
But yeah, still, South Windsor is at 2,100, and South Windsor is the most desirable area.
Yeah.
How the hell did... is it just through the renovations?
And this is just actually right before the COVID time, too. So, you know, I actually did not have a proper screening time and all that stuff because COVID was just starting. It was back in February time. So I did not actually go through many people to screen, but luckily I've been very fortunate, you know, to have the proper tenants and no problem in rent so far. Been getting that ever since 2,100.
That was, so you attribute that success to your renovations?
I believe, yes, I would say so. Definitely given the premium renovation, you know, again, once I did open up like half a wall, you would say, you know, just to give that open concept look. So as soon as you walk in, you're like, whoa, no, this is amazing, right? I try to get the pot lights, you know, spend the extra money there, you know, except for the flush mount. So that gives like a nice bright look. So it's a lot of the, you know, the first feel that you get as soon as you enter the home. You know, it's just everything, like obviously paint and everything adds up. But
what was the cash flow on that project? Net cash flow?
Cash flow on that is roughly about $1,100.
Oh my God. So we're already like at that point where a lot of people will cover all of their expenses with just two of your properties, yeah, right?
You're at 2,300, right?
Yeah, that's
the lean fire number. Yeah.
Pretty much. Okay. And let's go. How many properties do you have now again? Six? Five?
Six, I would say.
Six. Okay. Okay. Let's just go through the other ones and kind of bank through it. Like what happened after that?
Okay. So I think at the simultaneously, I got a property with you, Austin.
Yeah.
As a joint venture, the Gladstone. That's one of them. Right when the Palette project kind of sort of finished up, I realized that, you know, what, the East End is where is like the best middle ground. Like I don't want to be moving to South Windsor because that's sort of going to hurt my cash flow. But East End is where it's desirable. It's a good neighborhood. So let's move there. So there's an opportunity that came in investor friendly at Lloyd George. So This has been one of the renovation that I've never sort of done. So this was a complete sort of like gut in moving up. I ended up spending about $130,000 in renovation over here. This renovation is like, it sort of needed like the whole waterproofing. The house was shut for a long time. And part of the reason why I ended up going for this house is because it had a two-story huge garage at the back. So I was looking at like four incomes because once I was putting in an offer and I seen, I'm like, oh, you know what? This is two units almost at the back, two units at the front. I can easily cash around like $3,000, no problem from this. Because the mortgage will just be, you know, sort of like from the front unit, and the back is technically all free. And I know that from main one house, I get about 1,000. So getting, you know, 2,000 from the back is absolutely like no problem for me. So that's where I sort of
So how much did you buy this one for? Sorry.
This I got in for $222,000.
Yeah, Lloyd George is a really good area as well. Yeah. Let me set the stage a bit because I don't want to give the viewers the impression that you have unlimited capital. Let's be real and talk about where did the capital come from this time? Because me and you were chatting to this time and you were very, very stressed.
Oh, right? I was very stressed.
I felt so funny because it was concerning how leveraged he was. Let's talk through that moment. So we were doing the JV. Correct. And our refinance funds were taking a very long time to come out. We got it appraised very poorly, but then it appraised very well right after, right? We're waiting for the refinance funds, and you had your Lloyd George project going on
at the same time as well.
And you had how much money in your bank account at that time?
Zero. So I had zero in my bank account, and I was really running out of line of credits at the moment.
And I referred Sonny to a private lender who gave him, I think it was $100,000 or how much?
No. So he actually financed me for 80%, which he gave me about $180,000. And project timeline was about 4 months timeframe. So yeah, I was getting private money. Bank would not finance this because the condition was really, really poor for this home. But as an investor, I saw it as a huge opportunity that once it's said and done, I know that the money will start coming. So it was like a long picture, but this is, I probably wouldn't have done this if it was my first property, but getting sort of hands wet and understanding the renovation cost, I was like, yes, I will go in and do this. Let me dive into a little bit of the money situation. I've said this many times before to like other friends and investors as well, but I try to really use the banks, and leverage as much as I can, because I understand the money for, I understand the how leveraging is so important. I had one credit card, which was I was doing the balance transfer from $55,000. And I have a total combined unsecured line of credit of almost $170,000 of unsecured line of credit.
That you pulled out.
So I've always had that. And it's one of those times where I started this process back in 2018 when I sort of learned the leveraging side from the US investors. And I started knocking at all the banks and I'm like, hey, how much can you give me? How much can you give me? Right. So I was one of those annoying kids, just going in bank, find the income, getting the unsecured. So CIBC gave me $55,000. Scotia was very lenient, gave me $60,000. BMO was a bit strict, gave me $20,000. I did the similar thing with my wife as well, So now we have, a lot of the unsecured line of credit that I don't have to go and, bug people or family members that, hey, loan me some money because I have this thing to do just for emergencies. But I knew that I have this available to me. And in case of emergencies, if I ever want to use it, I can. So there came a time where I was like over leveraged in a sense, but I was almost maxing out my line of credits and had the balance transfer. The 10-month time frame was almost coming where it would have charged me like 21% interest, on the money. But luckily, the JV that I was doing with Austin, it finally kicked in, got the the 80 something thousand dollars at that time. And then also my first refi happened from Dougal, where that gave me like another 80 something thousand dollars. So a boom, in one shot, I got like $170,000 worth of, money in my pocket where I was just able to pay off, like all the resources. But just the power of leveraging, like I would not be able to do that because I was already in private money trying to do the Lloyd George renovation. I was almost reaching the peak, but then right in time, everything kind of clicked for me.
It's crazy. I think a lot of like
big real estate investors, at the end of the day, it's a leverage game, right? Like everything's being funded by debt. And if you can't juggle the debt and handle the stress, it's definitely like a key criteria. Like, I've definitely been in exactly what you're talking about. Line of credit's maxed out. I've actually been in like scenarios where I can't service the interest on my lines of credits because the money's just gone. And I'm like way over leveraged at this point. Like I'd say even like earlier this year, there was a point where like all my line of credits were done. I'm like, shit, what do I do now? I was about to run. And then all of a sudden everything just hits you at the same time. Funds from here, funds from there. And it's just like, shit, now you feel like the shit. And then I was looking at my bank account the other day because I started off a couple months ago with like a significant amount of capital. And then I've just been committing like little pieces here, little pieces there, like whatever. My bank account's been going lower and lower. And I looked at it, I'm like, shit, I'm going to be out of capital for like the next like 3 to 6 months. And then like, you know, it's all coming back eventually, right? So,
So one of the things is I don't want to glamorize this for people because I can like, at least for me, and I know Sunny for you as well, Mayu has a fucking like thick skull. He's good. He sleeps like a baby. He doesn't care. He's caught. He knows what's going on. But for me, like when that happens, man, I cannot say the amount of stress, uncertainty, and fear I'm in. Because if things don't pan out, right, you lose almost everything you've built. Almost everything. Right. Yeah. And it's such a terrifying feeling. And it's what helped us actually build our wealth is by taking these chances. But man, you need to have a stomach for it. And
for sure,
you need to do it at a sustainable pace.
I can't thank my wife enough, man. She's been so supportive throughout this whole thing.
I'd have to agree with that completely. And I think that's part of where my thick skull per se comes from, right? It's just like, I have displayed so much confidence on my real estate journey that now if I go around saying, shit, I'm fucked, I'm gonna look like a dumbass. So then I go, okay, like I just keep it in myself, in my head. Like I'm like sitting there thinking like 24/7, just like, what the hell am I gonna do? But like, yeah, like earlier this year, I had to go to my wife and I was like, look, like I'm completely tapped out. Like I need you to get some line of credits here and like we need to move around some money and like do some stuff. So like, yeah, ultimately, you know, if you have friends and families that can support you, like if you really need to, I just try to keep my wife outside of the real estate business, which then allows me to have a worst case backup, like if I need to like run to her, right?
For sure, yeah.
I'm not married, but, so I can't do that.
You can't relate. Solo soldier, right? So, but yeah, there was times, you know, where like my wife was getting all upset with me, and she's like, you know what? I don't even see my paycheck. It comes in, and the same day, it's out. You know, so at one shot, like you know, 10K payments, like that. So it's,
and then it's crazy because a couple months later, you'd be like, yeah, like we're good. Like you want to go out to eat like somewhere nice, and like a couple minutes later, you're like, no, like we need to hoard this money. Like
I've always been a risk taker, but sometimes I don't realize, you know, how much of a risk I'm taking until you're really in it. And there's a lot of like the hidden cost that's coming that, you know, you didn't anticipate at first, because a lot of times while doing renovation, you know, things can happen that you don't know from before, especially when you're breaking walls and you don't know what's behind the walls. So, you know, so I went through like the whole, like the electrical permit process. And there was one contractor, you know, who tried to sort of blackmail me in this Lloyd George project. So yeah, it was a lot of extra costs that I didn't sort of anticipate, but yeah, like, but that property now it's all solid, you know, and I got a really high appraisal. As a matter of fact, I got it appraised. I created the whole appraisal package at like 360. I got 390, but because of my debt to service ratios, they couldn't give me that. So I know that, you know, it comes next year, if I report a higher income through my business, I can pull some more equity out on the Lloyd George.
Beautiful. And what is that cash flowing you now?
So that's cash flowing me about $3,000 as such.
Nice. Okay. So pretty much that one property could retire a fair amount of people. Okay.
So really,
you have three properties that get you about $5,000 a month in rent?
Pretty much.
Sorry, in cash flow, not rent.
In cash flow, yes.
That's crazy. So three properties, and for most people, like that's enough, right?
Right. My goal is to 20,000. Once I'm 20,000, then I'm relaxing. I'm like, okay, now, because you know, we love to travel, and you know.
When you're at 20, you'll say your goals change to 30.
That's what it is, right? Like human beings are never happy. So you always want more.
So where are you at now, Sunny? So we walked through all of your projects, your ups and downs, the scares. What are you up to now?
So at this point, I'm sort of focusing on just my current properties in a way where, you know, how can I really make my improve my tenant base? Where how do I really keep my tenants sort of comfortable? In a sense where my properties don't really need much work, but it's just focusing on, you know, like the little bit of things that minor stuff that I have to do just to make sure, you know, their comfort's there. And I kind of, because I don't have a property manager, I kind of try to relate, you know, have that kind of relationship with my tenants where if there's anything they need, I'm just a message away. So I'm just dealing with some minor things, and that's what's going to be for the rest of the year. I have closed on another property as well, which is sort of like a secret project that me and my wife are going to be working on. I'll fill you guys in a lot more on it, you know, in a later stage, but it's going to be something new that we haven't worked on yet.
He comes back and says, yeah, I'm about 15K in cash.
Yeah, that's where it is at the moment.
Okay, awesome. I think that was great. I think we covered a lot of really solid content for everyone and anyone that's really just looking to get started, right? So I think that's always useful. So we're going to move on to our what the fuck do we call it? Okay. Yeah. So we're going to be moving on to our standard three questions that we ask every guest.
That's called the, was it called the furious rapid fire round? The rapid fire round. Let's do that again.
So we're going to be moving on now to our rapid fire round, Sunny. So where are we going to be seeing you 5 years from now? What do you see yourself doing? What does it look like?
In 5 years, I plan on somewhere being in the, you know, my goal, which is the 20K cash flow side. Pretty much I plan to be working always. Maybe I'll take, you know, retirement from work. It's just that, you know, my work has been sort of easy in a sense where it allows me to work remotely. I do have a lot of flexibility, so I just don't want to let it go as such. But I have more kids. I love kids, right? So in that sense. And just try to reach that 20K goal. That's where I plan on being in the next 5 years or so.
Well, the rate you're going,
right. Sunny, if you won $10 million, mm-hmm. what would you do with it? Both maybe a bit on the investing side, but more as to like, what would you do with it personally?
Personally, me, I would dump it back in real estate because I know the formula. It's like, that's what I tell my wife. I'm like, all this time I was waiting for this formula that would work, right? I know we've lost tons of money, you know, getting where we are, but now that we know the formula, we can make so much more just by, you know, putting money in the right resources and kind of getting it back. So yeah, like about 80% of, you know, that money, that funds that you just said is going to be going to real estate, and probably, you know, the next two is just for, you know, travel and all that stuff. So once the COVID thing gets fixed.
She supported you 100% along that crazy roller coaster.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think that's basically the most common answer that we get, right? It's a real estate investing podcast, so it is expected. So if you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would you choose and why?
I think, and I've been actually thinking about this, I think Grant Cardone, to be honest with you. The reason why I say that is because his marketing as such, and the way he's like an influencer, is definitely like, you know, just sitting down with him, try to get in his this person's brain and move eventually to the commercial side. I thought, you know, how he says under 16 units is just a waste, and how he's so against, you know, having his own primary residence. He's like, you should always rent, and just why, you know, he thinks the way he does and he's so successful. So yeah, he would be one of the person that would love to get in touch.
Did you make it out to, what was it, Wealth Hacker last year?
I did not, no. Wow. I was actually busy doing the renovations at the time, I remember. But the year before I did go.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. Anyway, Sunny, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. It was awesome catching up with you, hearing what you got going on. I'm sure the listeners got a ton of value from it. And again, like, thank you for being super transparent about everything in the journey, the ups, the downs, the successes, the payoffs. Wishing you the best of luck on hitting you your 20K. I do know, knowing you, it's probably going to double that.
It's going to be done in 2 years, man.
Again, like, we'll I'm sure we'll have you back on the podcast later on in the future. Thank you all for tuning in. Make sure to like and subscribe. Share this with any friends or family if you think they'll get value out of this. And until next time, guys, live better,
fuck no, it's invest smarter and live better. Ah, fuck.
Why does this always happen?
Oh, do that again. Fuck.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Sunny. It was an absolute pleasure. Love catching up. I'm sure the audience out there got a ton of value. And like, we really appreciate you being transparent with the ups, the downs of the real estate journey, and just kind of showing what it takes to be where you're at right now. For those of you guys listening out there, if you enjoy it, please, please, please do share this with a friend, family, like, comment, subscribe, all of that good stuff. If you want to find Sunny's contact information, Sunny, where can they reach out to you at?
I have my YouTube channel is Think Freedom. And I have, I'm on Instagram, ThinkFreedom_REI for real estate investing. And you can also add me on Facebook as well. As I go by Sunny Chaudhry.
Okay, we're going to throw all of those links in the show notes description so you guys can find Sunny out there. And anyways, guys, until next time, invest smarter and live better.